I'm afraid.
Okay, it's Saturday night. It's time for the usual Fairtax show. I do not feel well tonight. I'm going to start coughing here in a minute, and my voice is scratchy. There's no way I can talk for a couple of hours, and I'm very, very sorry to you, our faithful listeners. But what we're going to do tonight is we're going to go ahead and replay the first segment of the Fairtax show, which goes back and defines the income tax, where the income tax came from, and exactly how much the income tax costs you. Be sure and tune in next week, Monday night, really, for the Hour of Truth, and next week on Saturday at 7 p.m. for an all-new edition of the Fairtax Show. I'll also be on Eric Ferris's show tomorrow. Don't call in to this show. This is not a live show. We're getting ready to replay an old show because I'm not feeling well. So I'll talk to you next week, and thank you very much.
Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Welcome, everyone, to the premiere edition of the Fairtax Show. We'll be here on Saturday nights until there's just no more interest in it. I hope that's never. We hope to get this Fairtax thing rolling. The Fairtax, if you folks aren't familiar with it, was proposed about 18 years ago now, 22 years ago now. I've kind of been on board with this thing since it started. Since the very first time I heard about it, I went out and studied about it. I looked into it. I was, if you want some credentials on me, I was the Missouri 999 guy for the Herman Cain campaign. And the 999 thing, of course, was nothing more than a bridge to the fair tax. It was Cain's idea of how to get us there. There are all kinds of proposals out there today. There are flat tax proposals. There are proposals to tax income over a certain level instead and let everybody else go. There are all kinds of proposals. Nothing comes anywhere near the fair tax in both fairness, in getting the government off your back, and in providing an explosive jolt to the United States economy. Recovery is absolutely essential, and it's essential that we get this done quickly. And the fair tax is our best bet for getting there rapidly. I gave you folks a textbook to go by. If you didn't, that's all right. We're just going to kind of follow the textbook here for the first 8 to 10 weeks. So if you didn't buy it, that's okay. If you did buy it and read it, you're going to be hearing some of the things that you read. But that's where we're going to start, because it's important to understand what the fair tax is all about. Now, as you go out, as you learn about the fair tax, and as you become a disciple, as you go out into the world and try to get people to understand about the fair tax, you're going to hear lots of things. And there's one thing to remember about the objections to the fair tax. You're going to get objections from one of three kinds of people, and it's important when you hear an objection that you figure out which kind of person it is that you're getting the objection from. And we'll deal with these objections as we go on in the course, but I'm just kind of giving you a preview here. You're going to hear objections from people who have some interest in the fair tax. That is, they make money off of it. You're going to hear objections from accountants, from tax lawyers, from politicians, from people who make money off of the current tax system. And believe me, they're out there. We'll be talking exactly about how much those people cost you yearly as a taxpayer and how much they cost you yearly as a consumer. You're going to hear objections from people who, for one reason or another, benefit. They're on the favorite picked side of the current tax system. People who don't pay any taxes at all now. People who don't think they pay any taxes at all now. They all do. But there are a lot of people out there who don't think they pay any taxes. Who get more back at the end of the year than they paid in. There are people who know they don't pay any taxes, who don't work, who don't earn any money, who draw money from your tax dollars. But then there are people who also benefit from the tax code by virtue of the fact that they pay less tax than you or I do. Everybody gets some certain breaks, and some people get more breaks than others. So you're going to hear some objections from people who look at the fair tax and say, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my 15th mortgage deduction because this fair tax is fair. And then you're going to hear objections from people who just don't get it. Who don't understand either the current tax code or the code you're proposing, who are satisfied to go through life grabbing a sheet of someone's sound bites and using that as though it were their own little reality. So figure out as you learn more and more about the fair tax, as you become a disciple of the fair tax, because you will. And as you go out into the world to try to help us make this thing a reality, figure out where the objections are going to come from and how to deal with them. The textbook is the Fair Tax Book. It was written by Neil Bortz and a congressman named Linder. It was the book that kind of laid out, it wasn't the actual book that invented the fair tax. It was the book that kind of laid it out for us lay people. And there are some follow-on books, which we may get into later, but this is the textbook that we're going to use to begin this show, to lay out the first 8, 10, maybe 12 episodes, depending on how far we get. As always, our phone number here at Missouri Grassroots Radio is 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. We welcome your comments. We welcome your questions. What I want to do, though, is there are a lot of you out there listening to us who are already sold on the fair tax, to whom I am not really preaching or even teaching, but who've just come along to kind of be part of the fellowship, part of the congregation, part of the crowd that wants to try to make this thing happen. For you folks, I simply ask you, not to call in this first couple of 3 weeks with questions about, or statements about corporate income taxes until we get to that, with questions about prebates until we get to that, because that will just confuse those of us who are just coming along and learning as we go. You call in, we'll talk about those things. I'm not telling you that I'm going to hang up on you or anything like that. Call with your objections if you think you can object, and if you think you can handle the truth when we put your objections to bed. And that's about where we're at with tonight's show. We're going to get a roll as soon as we come back from this break, and we're going to start right in with finding out how much you know about exactly what you pay in taxes.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
We're back. That was a quick break. We talked a little bit before we went on the break about what the fair tax is. We gave a little preview on what we were going to do here. I see I'm looking here at the board. We've gathered quite a few listeners. I hope you folks are ready to learn something about the fair tax. I want to ask you something. How long since you asked a friend of yours, what did you make last week, or what did you make on your last paycheck, or do you even know what you made on your last paycheck? The answer is likely no. Now, you can tell me what you brought home. If you ask someone, what did you make on your last paycheck? Oh, $624. No, that's what you brought home last week. That's not what you made last week. The chances are more than 50-50 that you haven't a clue what you made last week. I mean, if you make $10 an hour and you worked exactly 40 hours, none less, none more, then you know what you made last week. You made $400. What if when you make $400, you brought home for it? What if you work 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, and at the end of the week, they put $400 in your hand? That's how much you made. You made $400. Now, the fact of the matter is that if you make around $400 a week, that 10% of that, or in that range, disappears before you even get your paycheck. You know it. You know it because you have, in your mind, a bring-home salary. You don't even think about what you make anymore. You think about what you bring home to buy food with and to pay the rent with. Here's a better question. How much tax do you pay? How much income, how much personal income tax, individual income tax do you pay? Ask anyone that question. And what you're going to hear from the vast majority of people is, oh, geez, you know, what I did was I got back $485. That person has no idea how much tax they paid. The only number that matters to the majority of Americans today is how much they got back at the end of the year. Unless you are that 40-hour a week, $10 an hour guy, if you're a $60,000 a year wage earner or a $50,000 a year wage earner, somewhere in that average middle class, you know how much you got back. But you have no clue how much tax you paid, because what they did was they seized from you large chunks. If you're in that 50 to 60,000, 25% of everything you made last year, and then on April 15th, they fed some of it back to you, and here you sit, happy-go-lucky, saying, oh my God, I got back $840 this year. Well, yeah, but you sent them $5,400. See, most people's mind doesn't even wrap around the amount of tax they pay because the government has got you so fixed on, and next week we're going to get into to the evil that we're talking about now, withholding, and how that came about and what that is. But the government has got your mind so transfixed on what you take home as a wage and with what you get back from them at the end of the year that they've got you completely oblivious to how much tax you pay and how much money you actually make. It really is an evil, insidious thing that's gone way, way, way beyond what anyone intended. Well, that's not true. I started to say way beyond what anyone intended when they started, but it's gotten us to where they intended it to be when they started this system. Here's another thing I want you to understand. And now, we hear from people that what we'd ought to do, and I just had a discussion with a fellow who calls himself a conservative, who believes that he actually said the evil of the fair tax is that I can't use the tax system to gouge people, these Hollywood communists, and to gouge these people that Barack Obama says ought to be paying more taxes. Michael Moore ought to be paying more taxes. Do you hear that? Do you hear someone say it is a terrible thing that the IRS is apologizing to me this week on today's headlines for targeting my organization? But my God, I think the income tax is a good thing because it's going to allow me to target them. I mean, come on. It's a two-edged sword, and it's going to cut you. If you're hate to use the word conservative anymore because that word has become so stretched. And as a libertarian, I look at conservatives who are all across the spectrum and all calling themselves conservatives, and like this clown that I talked to today about this thing. It's really insane. Anyway. We sidetrack here. Let's talk about this corporate tax. Let's talk about going and taxing these evil rich corporations because it is currently being sold to you that your tax breaks or the tax breaks for the middle class are going to be paid for by taxing these evil corporations. Well, Just stop with me and think for a minute. You go into the local convenience store and you buy a candy bar, a Hershey bar, and you go up to the cash register and you pay $1.85 for this candy bar that when you were a kid cost you 32 cents. And you say, oh my gosh, the cost of candy bars has sure gone up since I was a kid. I can remember when I bought these things for 32 cents. And then you go out and you get in the car and you're eating on your Hershey bar and you turn on the radio and you hear a sound bite from the president who says that basically what he's going to do is he's going to give you a tax break so that you can take care of your children better and so that you can put some more money in your pocket. And he's going to pay for that tax break by taxing the Hershey Corporation. Now, I want you to understand and think with me for a minute. You just pushed $1.85 across the counter for a Hershey bar. Where in the world else, besides out of your $1.85, do you think the Hershey Company gets any money? You know? And so what we have here is we have a confectioner who buys chocolate from a farmer, who pays money to import the chocolate, who makes the chocolate into a candy bar, who buys a wrapper for the candy bar from a paper company, who puts the candy bar on a truck and moves it to the warehouse, where it's stored until the grocer orders it, and it's trucked then to the grocery store, and at the grocery store it's put on a shelf and it's sold to you. Who along that line, who along that whole chain of events has any money from anywhere except from that $1.85 you just passed across the counter? Where, yeah, I understand the trucker got his money from the warehouse, and the warehouse got their money from the grocer, and go through the whole route if you want to. You know, the confectioner got his money from the warehouse. But where did all that money come from? You know, it came from you passing $1.85 across the counter. Part of that $1.85 went to pay for the truck that brought it. Part of that $1.85 went to pay for the warehouse. Part of that $1.85 was paid by the warehouse to the confectioner. It all came from you. So when the utilities, the cost of utilities goes up at the factory where they make chocolate bars, or the factory where they make paper to wrap the chocolate bars in, the cost of the candy bar goes up. When the price of diesel fuel goes up for the truck that moves the candy bar around, the price of the candy bar goes up. When the rent goes up at the warehouse, the price of the candy bar goes up. When the minimum wage goes up on the convenience store guy, the price of the candy bar goes up. And guess what happens when taxes on the trucking company and Nestle's and the warehouse and the convenience store chain go up? Guess what happens when their taxes go up? Who the hell pays those taxes? The Hershey Company has no money except the money that came out of your pocket. So I get so tired of having to argue this with people who are seemingly intelligent. Oh, it comes out of the profits. Oh, it comes out of the shareholders' share. Oh, it comes out of the profits come from you. The shareholders' share comes from you. The labor comes from you. It all comes from you. Jorgensen did a study, a very in-depth study, and we're going to get into this later, that said that 22% of everything you buy, on the average, is part of the tax bill. 22% of the cost of that candy bar paid the tax bill. Now, we're not talking anymore about utilities, labor, any of that stuff, paid the tax bill of the grocer, the trucker, the warehouse, the trucker, and the chocolate maker. The paper factory that made the wrapper, the farmer who planted the chocolate bean, the people who harvested the chocolate bean. Don't think that when you go to the, it's any different. You know, the doctor buys Q-tips and stethoscopes and the little sheets that go on the bed that get changed every time someone comes in the room, and the little gown you put on so that he can touch your body in unseemly ways. All of these things have the same tax built into them. In addition to that, the doctor pays his half of the Social Security tax, and we're going to get into that in a minute, of everybody who works at his office. You are taxed to death. So do this. Take what you get out your last income tax return and figure out not what you got back, but what you paid the government. And then take everything you made last year, everything you brought home, and add it all up. Subtract what you've got in savings, and that's what you spent last year. Take 22% of that and add it to what you paid the federal government in direct taxes. The fair tax, just to jump ahead for a minute, is going to be revenue neutral. That is, the federal government, if we instituted a fair tax today, would bring in the same amount of revenue next year as it brought in this year under the income tax. If we taxed consumer purchases at 23%. Well, hell, 22% of what you're buying is already taxed. 22% of everything you pay when you shove $1.85 across the counter is already taxed. Take that off, add 23%, and your candy bar becomes $1.87 instead of $1.85 after you've paid the tax. And listen, you don't have any income tax. You don't have any inheritance tax. You don't have any excise taxes. You don't have any Social Security tax. You don't have any Medicare tax. For an extra 2 cents per candy bar, if you work 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, you make $400. Now, decide. Do you want to buy a candy bar and pay some tax or not? You don't even have to pay the damn tax if you don't want to. Don't buy the candy bar. Put the money in the bank. Buy some stocks. Put the money in your 401k. Our tax system has become so evil, so corrupt, so what's going on behind the curtain that you clearly don't have a clue how much money your government is sucking out of you. And they mean for it to be that way. That's exactly their intention. That's exactly the way they want it to be. And that's exactly what we want to try to undo. When we come back, we're going to get into a little bit of the history. We're going to talk about where this income tax came from. And then we're going to move on to withholding a little bit if we have time today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. Don't go away. You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Absolutely. Now, that was Patrick Henry, and we are talking today about the fair tax. And listen, brothers and sisters, when you talk about the current tax system and a better tax system, you are talking about nothing short of liberty. You are talking about nothing short of the difference between liberty, both economic and political, and enslavement, both economic and political. Because the tax system, brothers and sisters, is not about revenue anymore. The federal government, with the fair tax that has been sitting there waiting in the House Ways and Means Committee to get to the floor and actually be debated and passed, been sitting there for 10 years now, for a decade, waiting to be passed, provides them as much revenue as anything else, as the current income tax system. It isn't about revenue. It's about power. The current tax system, the current tax code, the Internal Revenue Service is about power. If you don't believe that, what more timely an example do you need than to pick up this morning's paper and read the damn headline on the front page? The IRS has been 2 years now targeting any group with the word patriot or the word Tea Party in their name. What more do you need? The fellow who believes that you don't have a right to your money, that someone else has a right to your money, that the money that you have is community property. The man who believes that, who's sitting in the White House, he owns the IRS. What more do you need? The tax code is not about revenue. The streams of revenue are available. The tax code is about power. And this is what I was talking about before the break, about the two-edged sword. This is what I was talking about to my friend who thinks that, yeah, well, hell, we ought to use the tax code to get at Sean Penn, and we ought to use the tax code to get at Michael Moore. Yeah, okay. How's the tax code? How's that working for you, huh? Before we go into the next step, I want to flash back to that last promo we did. Okay, this show and the other shows that I'm going to push bumps for later are brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It's Missouri Grassroots Radio. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a group that kind of collects all of the patriot groups in the state of Missouri. It's not any kind of a governing group. The first promo that we heard was your invitation to join. I'm not going to go into that. It's at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org if you're interested in finding out what it's all about. It's just simply a conduit to allow groups to communicate with one another, to use each other, to become a powerful base. But there's no dues. There's no overhead. There's no advertising. Our one money raiser for the year is this Secret Santa that you just heard a promo for. Now, last year, we had a goal of $1,000. The first year that we were in existence, the year before last, we raised $500. We just came along and said, hey, we want to do this thing. We raised $500. So last year, we set us a goal of $1,000, and we almost doubled that. And I'm telling you what we do. Here's what we do. You know how a Secret Santa works. We go into a store that has a layaway plan, Walmart, Kmart, Target, you name it. Somewhere in the state of Missouri, we spread the money out. We go in there on Christmas Eve, and we find layaways with toys in them. We don't buy people coffee tables, we find layaway with toys, exclusively toys in it, and we find layaways that aren't going to be paid off by Christmas morning. We don't ask the politics of the people involved. We don't ask the circumstances. It matters not to us. This is Christmas. It's about the kids. And so we pay off those layaways. We have the store manager call the families and say, come pick up your layaway. It's been sprung. I tell this story at least weekly, but the one that I got to do last year, I paid off two layaways, and then I had a little bit of money left. So I said, okay, find me a layaway for, a maximum of XYZ dollars. And they came back with a layaway that had, and we're so used to, we always, we see the gluttony of Christmas. Some of us have been part of it. Some of us just witness it. The gluttony, of Christmas. This layaway had one doll in it. That was it. I like to think, it may not be true. Christmas is a gluttonous time of the year. But I like to think that some little girl somewhere, this was her whole Christmas. It was a nice doll. It was a $40 doll. But it had only had two payments made on it. It hadn't had a payment made on it in 3 months. It obviously wasn't going to get to this little girl by Christmas. I don't care if the mother quit her job because she got pissed off. I don't care if her car broke down and she had to spend the money on that. I don't care if her mom got sick and she had to spend all her money on that. I don't care what the circumstances were. I don't care if the woman voted for Barack Obama. I care that little girl got that doll for Christmas. And that's what Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa is all about. And that's what we want you to participate in. Every penny that you send to Secret Santa. And we start this thing early in the year because there's no harder time for us to beg you for money than November and December. You've got everything coming at you in November and December. So if you can go today and give $3, $5, $10, $100 to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa, that would be great. We have no overhead. We have no advertising. We don't buy the gas that is spent to go to the store and do this thing. There is nothing that comes out of this except the cause that you're sending your money for. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. That's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Spell it out all one word. Click on the Secret Santa button in the top. Use PayPal. Send us a couple of bucks. Please do it today. You can do it while you're listening. You open another window on your browser and go there, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check on the Secret Santa button and send us whatever you can. Okay, where did this damned income tax come from? We know now that this thing creeps into every corner of our lives. We know now that it's incredibly. If you didn't feel bad before this show started about how heavy the federal government is pounding on you, about what kind of weight they are throwing around your neck before they throw you over the cliff. If you didn't know before this show started, you'd ought to be pretty darn depressed right now, because everything you buy, every dollar you earn is taxed by the federal government. We know now that there are no corporate income taxes, that money comes from you. In addition to that, all you folks who say, well, I work 40 hours a week for $10 a week. I know how much I paid in taxes because at the end of the year, I get back everything I paid in. I mean, the total tax paid number on the bottom of my tax return is zero. And I get back everything I paid in. Now, I don't care if the government holds my money for 12 months. That's okay. It's good for me at the end of the year. Well, take out your pay stub again. All right? Look at that Social Security tax. If you worked 40 hours a week, for $10 an hour, you paid, hold on, I've got this written down here. If you worked 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, netting $400 or grossing $400, you paid $53.68 in Social Security and Medicare taxes. You'll never get that money back. That money's gone. You'll probably, I mean, if you're younger than 20 years old, if you're younger than 30 years old, you're not even going to get it back in the form of Social Security, I'm sorry to tell you. You're never getting that money back. So don't think you didn't pay any taxes. Aside from that, if you got a net tax bill of zero on your income tax refund return, you still paid that 22% of every candy bar, of every loaf of bread, of every car, of every doctor's visit. Every bill you paid had 22% of it headed for Washington, D.C. Now, some years ago, some people got on a boat and came over to the Promised Land. They fought and they bled and they died and they risked their fortunes and their very lives for what they believed in. And here's what they believed in. They believed that 5% of your government should come from Washington and 95% should come from the state of Missouri and your local community. 95% of all governments. So you can imagine that back in those days, it didn't take much money to run the government. The president got a little salary. The senators got a very small salary. They bought some paper clips and some paper, I'm sure, and maybe some pencils. They bought the oil for the lamps so they could work late at night. And that was about it. They did have a small navy. They didn't have an army even at the time. But relative to what's going on today, the federal government was exceptionally small. It was about 5% of all the governing. And that's what they believed in. So how did they pay for that if there were no income taxes? Well, what they did then was they had some small consumption taxes, some of it on everyday items that you and I would use, like sugar and salt, some of it on selective items that people would use, like whiskey, alcohol in general, and tobacco, and some of it on luxury items. You know, you and I, we wouldn't have a carriage. We might have a horse and a saddle. You know, only Bill Gates would have a carriage. So that's what they tax. They tax those things, and they managed to raise enough money to buy the paper clips. And then along comes, you know what, the war. And wars cost money. So they had to raise an army. And what they did at that point, and we're talking about the War of 1812 here, was they instituted a wider tax on consumables. And they started adding tariffs to imported goods. When the war was over in 1817, after they had paid any debt that they had raised off, you know, back in those days when the government borrowed money, they actually went as soon as they could and paid it off. When they paid off the debt from the War of 1812 and about 1817, they abolished all those taxes again. They abolished all consumption taxes and found that they could run the government on just import tariffs. And nothing was ever said about taxation again until the Civil War. And when the Civil War came around, someone got the crazy idea that in order to raise money to pay for the war, they should levy a tax on income. And so they did. They levied a 3% tax on all income over $600. Now now understand that $600 at the beginning of the Civil War was $10,000 today. And then that tax went to 5% on all income over $10,000, which was $167,000 today. In addition to that, they imposed an inheritance tax and introduced some more excise taxes. An interesting thing happened after the war was over. The politicians, surprisingly, they kind of wanted to keep this tax going. But the American people weren't going to have any part of it. In fact, the Republican-Democratic battle in the first three elections after the war was whether we should or shouldn't keep the income tax. And the income tax went away because the people wanted it to. But the politicians had already wet their whistle. And for the next three decades, the fight was on for where we were going to get an income tax. In 1894, finally, the Congress was able to impose an income tax on all income over $4,000. Now, that's $50,000. So you can understand, and it was this way, but I'm asking you to put yourself in a position of a 3% tax on all income over $50,000. How in the world do you imagine Washington, D.C. convinced people that this was a good thing? I mean, after the war, they had had to dismiss the income tax. How do you suppose over a period of three decades that they convinced the American people that they needed this income tax? All right, you're right. Absolutely. They sold it as a soak the rich kind of income tax. They sold it as a get the evil rich guy kind of income tax. They imposed this tax on everyone making over $50,000. And the campaigns sounded so much like the ones you hear today that it would make you shiver. I mean, if you would go back and study the history of this tax, you would throw up every time you hear President Obama say everyone ought to pay their fair share. Because you know when you hear that three decades from now, that fair share is going to be yours. That's what happened. A punish the rich tax was sold to the American people in 1894, and within three decades, and a lot happened in that three decades, the burden of income tax had hit every American who earned a dime. So imagine what it's going to be for your children when you stand and applaud while President Obama says all those rich people need to pay their fair share. Imagine what that fair share is going to look like in 30 years. Because that's how we got where we are today. If the income tax had been passed and kept exactly like it was in 1894, you would not be paying a penny of federal tax today. If the federal income tax were as it was passed in 1894, you would not be paying the federal government one dime today. Now, shortly after the 1894 tax was passed, the Supreme Court said, you can't do that. And I get a kick, I get a real kick out of people who say, we shouldn't pay, and you just don't pay it. It's unconstitutional. Well, is it unconstitutional for women to vote? Is it unconstitutional for 18-year-olds to vote? It's not unconstitutional to pay income taxes. And why is that? Because when Congress was told by the Supreme Court, you can't do that, they passed and the states ratified a constitutional amendment that says, well, sure as hell we can. It is as constitutional as your right to carry a gun that the federal government can reach into your pocket and steal as much money as they set their mind to. Because the 16th Amendment, ratified in 1913, paved the way for everyone paying their fair share. Paved the way for the government to come steal money from you and give it to someone else. Paved the way for the government to come down to you and say, we don't like cigarette smoke, so if you smoke, we're going to tax you more than the other guy. Pave the way for the government to come down to you and say, you're single and don't have any kids? Hell, we'll nail your butt. Pave the way for the federal government to go to a company and say, if you make this product, we'll tax you so hard it'll hurt. And if you make this product, we'll not tax you a dime. Pave the way for the federal government to exercise the power of enslavement over you. That's what this tax code is all about. Now, imagine with me, we started this show tonight by asking you how much tax you had paid. If you made $50,000 last year and you have a wife and one kid, can you imagine that you would not be outraged on April 15th if you had to sit down and write a check to Washington, D.C. for $7,420? Okay, here we go. Here, write me a check for $7,420, put it in an envelope, and send it to me. You'd be furious. You'd be beside yourself. You'd be on the phone to your senator right now saying, what the hell are you giving me that's worth $7,420? Next week, we're going to talk about how they get away with getting $7,420 out of your pocket, and you don't say a word. Read the next chapter if you're following us in the text. Excuse me, on withholding. That's how they do it. That's how they get it. That's how you don't have to sit down on April 15th and write a check for $7,420. That's how you have no clue how much tax you paid the federal government. That's how you have no clue what you make, just what you bring home. And that's the intention of that. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to wrap up for the night.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Sport figures, soldiers, musicians, politicians, well, except for this one.
I am not gay. I never have been gay.
They have all come out of the closet proclaiming they are gay. Well, the old patriot has been seriously thinking about this, and I, too, would like to make an announcement right here on Gun Owners Minute. Yes, I'm coming out of the gun vault into the sunshine. I am giddy. There, I said it. I'm giddy over guns. Do you hear me, Obama? I'm giddy over guns of any kind. Hunting guns, targets, concealed carry, black powder, pink ones, black ones, shiny ones, big ones, little ones. And do I have the nerve to say it? Assault weapons. There, I said it. It's all out in the open for everyone to know. I am a giddy gun nut. Boy, that's a lot of pressure off my shoulders. Do you think the president will call and thank me for having the courage to come out? I'm getting giddy just thinking about that. Oh, wait. What am I going to tell my wife? Man, I got to think about this for a while. How am I going to explain my coming out to her and the kids? She thought my magazines I was hiding were just girly magazines. I'm going down to the gun vault and think this over. Maybe I came out too soon. I wonder if the NRA has a support group for this. This has been the old page.
Hey, we're back. We're going to the phones now. Bev Martin's with us, and Bev is a fair tax advocate from way, way back. I'm telling you, we'll be talking to her as this series goes on, because Bev knows more than anybody about what the fair tax is and what the research is all about. How are you doing tonight, Bev?
I am enjoying this so much. What you're doing is bringing this issue into a level that anyone listening can understand, and that is one of the most difficult things to do, because most people think they can't understand their tax code, and they just turn it all over to government like they were turning over a math problem too difficult to solve. And you are making it so clear that the government wants you to think this way. They want you to be ignorant of how the taxes are collected, and they certainly do not want you to be aware of how much you pay every day. This is just outstanding what you are doing for people to help them understand the difference between an income tax, which is communist-inspired, and the fair tax. So thank you so very much.
Well, you're right. You know, the income tax, a tax on income, was designed by Engels and Marx, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was the second plank of the tin to get rid of capitalism. They knew they had to have a progressive income tax to kill people's desire to work.
That's right. Okay, well, I'll tell you, I appreciate you listening, and thanks for those kind words, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, people just don't it's important before we even try to get this fair tax ball rolling that people understand. And I'll tell you, I give this little speech to liberal and conservative groups alike. One of my favorite kinds of groups to talk to is college Democrat groups. And when we present this whole program, starting with what's the federal government sucking out of you, all the way through how progressive this tax really is when you get down to the nitty-gritty and look at it, progressive yet fair, we have as many converts from the left side of the aisle as from the right.
Well, you should, because both sides agree we've got to have jobs, and that is not a right or a left-sided issue. That is just a plain survival issue, and this bill would promote jobs in this country. So anyone who takes the time to study this I don't care what party you're from, unless you just want to continue the income tax for your own personal gain and glory, there is no reason to maintain the income tax.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore